Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
It's 6:14. Dave put his time in, but Dave was the one telling you that they have a dense fog advisory in effect, and in certain areas, it's hard for the National Weather Service to tell where it is, so the best I can tell you is if you get some fog, slow down, be careful, don't use the flashers unless you're stopped. That's what the state law says, and obviously you're going to want to have your headlights on because it's, you know, still dark outside. Otherwise, maybe a chance for showers today and tomorrow, then a cool front comes through on Wednesday, and we're going to have a little bitty taste of fall on Thursday. Sunny, less humid, highs around 87, but lows, North Shore in the 50s, South Shore in the 60s, so we'll get a little taste of what hopefully will be an early fall here in the city and the area. Mark Hamrick joins us now, Bankrate Senior Economic Analyst, to talk about the job numbers or lack thereof. How you doing, Mark?
Doing well, my friend. Good to be with you, Tommy.
Thanks for taking the time. Tell me about the September jobs report and how important it is and the fact that we don't have it. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm. With the federal government shutdown, Tommy, we don't get the regular federal statistical data that we have come to rely on, really take for granted. And this is quite inopportune timing in the sense of the job market is seen as essentially at something akin to a standstill at the moment. Remember, going back to June, we had a decline of 13,000 jobs reported by the Labor Department upon revision. And then in July, we added only 79,000 jobs, August adding only 22,000. What happened in September? Well, in terms of the federal government's reply, we don't know yet. And so we do get other data from the private sector. ADP, the private payrolls processor, told us they had a contraction of 32,000 jobs. And of course, we would have had three economic reports released last week, construction spending last Wednesday, the weekly jobless claims or new applications for unemployment benefits on Thursday. And then as you asked about the employment situation on Friday, which also gives us the unemployment rate most recently at 4.3%. So we all are reliant on this data because we need to make the best decisions we can on our personal finances. Business leaders need the data. Policymakers need it, including the Federal Reserve. And it's another unintended casualty of the inability of our elected officials to do the bare minimum to help the American people.
How accurate is the data? Because it seems like they release it, then we see revisions.
I would say it's quite accurate, but the revisions are the result of getting new information over time. And so the palpable example of that is that there are two components of the survey, or there are actually two surveys. One is the so-called establishment survey. That's the survey of employers that gives us that payrolls number, how many jobs were added or lost. and employers have to respond to that data. And the collection, by the way, is done around the 12th of the month. Mm-hmm. For this month, that's now 5 days away. Over time, more employers respond and we get more information. That's why those revisions occur. So there's nothing nefarious here, but we would always welcome an improvement in the process or the quality. And we do get improvement over time as we get more information.
If you can, Mark, take it down to the street level a little bit, if you will, and for the average guy or woman going to work this morning trying to understand how this relates to them, who looks at these numbers and how do they use these numbers to determine what exactly?
Sure. Well, if you're going to work this morning, as you mentioned there, Tommy, that's the crux of the issue. Do you have a job to go to? Do you have job security? And you know, for years, as I've monitored and analyzed this data, it does tend to be the most important economic report of the month when we're talking about the employment report. Mm-hmm. And so unless we're trust fund children, I'm not. anyone listening, you tell me. We're reliant on our income or the money that our family has or that our household has for the quality of our living. And so if we have very poor employment prospects, such as what occurs during a recession, and we've had a few of the doozies of those over the years, then that is instructive. And when the job market is firm or red hot, as it was a couple of years ago, that's instructive as well. I'll give you another example. The Labor Department earlier last week, before the shutdown, told us about job openings. And we now have one job open for every unemployed job seeker. In 2022, when the job market was regarded as quite strong, there were two jobs open for every unemployed job seeker. So that tells you about the way the job market has not evolved, but essentially settled back into a rhythm that is less than providing reason for comfort.
I get texts from people, and we have an Oakland Heart Jeweler talking text line 504-260-1870. I say that not that you're going to text, Mark, but so people understand they can text their questions in safely. No texting and driving ever, please, especially during a fog. But a couple of people actually are kind of hinting that there's something nefarious here going on. You used the word nefarious before, that somehow the government, they don't want these jobs. They don't want their job reports coming out because it's going to show that the economy is approaching stagflation. Let me take a break. You can address that when we come back. I just realized the time. 6:20, Mark Hamrick will address your text about stagflation, about the government hiding the numbers and shutting it down, et cetera, et cetera. When we return right now, time for traffic, WWL. 6:25, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with our friend Mark Hamrick, Bankrate Senior Economic Analyst, talking about the job numbers that are not available because of the government shutdown. Somebody texted in before the break about something afoot where the government didn't want these numbers to come out, that we're approaching stagflation. And I guess we should start, Mark, with your explaining what stagflation is for those that were not around during the hellish days, the hellacious days, I guess, of what, the 70s or the 80s? When was stagflation?
It was both. It was the late 70s, early 80s.
Okay, so tell us what that is, and is there anything going on here that would indicate we're approaching stagflation?
First of all, there's not a precise definition for it, and that's part of the problem in using the word. But okay, what it aims to get at, and we're not experiencing the 70s, 80s version of it, is where you have virtually no economic growth and you do have a sharp rise in prices. The inflation that we're experiencing right now is not of the order that we had back then, but it's bad enough, and it's still essentially the number one economic complaint of virtually all Americans who are asked the question, you know, what is the economic ill that is a problem for you? And similarly, we continue to enjoy at least some economic growth. And so I would say that the combination of slowing growth or slower growth and rising prices is definitely a feature, not a bug, of the current economy. I have trouble using that word because the standard that was seen in the 1970s and the early 1980s was more severe and lacking a precise definition for it. And Tommy, you know me, to be someone who tells you what I know and not to rely on what I might think, I don't feel like we fit that definition.
Well, let me ask you this. Having gone through it, can we call it hellflation?
Why not? Why don't we coin that? You and I will make T-shirts, and then we'll figure out what yacht we're going to buy after
Tim, get the Secretary of State online. Put a mark on that, please. Hellflation. Mark and I want to own that. Let's talk about the timing of this. Why is it so bad with the government shutdown, both in terms of numbers and what's going on in the economy?
The reason is primarily because right now the economy is going through a very unusual experience, and that is the things that we just now talked about, that the job market is cooling. There is a higher risk of recession right now. We just queried economists on that question for our Bankrate Quarterly Economic Survey, and they do say that the chances of a recession over the next year are close to 4 in 10. That's higher than would typically be the case, not the highest that we've seen in the last few years. So, for example, we all need to make decisions about, are we going to spend? Are we going to buy something that might cost a lot that may or may not be discretionary? Business leaders need to hire. Many are opting not to right now. We have a Federal Reserve meeting at the end of the month, and they're going to have to make a decision one way or the other what to do with interest rates, but they're going to be lacking unless we get this shutdown resolved soon. A lot of the data they would typically have. They will have plenty of data, and they will make a decision.
Does anybody benefit by these numbers not being available politically?
I don't really think so, because number one, the data will eventually come out. We have private sector data that tells us the story in other ways, and so, you know, maybe there are some investors out there of a very sophisticated nature who can benefit by making the right bet on how the performance of a given company or the broadly speaking the economy may unfold. But no, I think if anything, it is a very unproductive process. And by the way, it wastes taxpayers' money by magnitudes that are just unacceptable. Palpable example of that is that some of the hundreds of thousands of federal workers who are affected by this, those who are on furlough and not deemed to be critically important, are basically paid to do nothing. And so when they are eventually paid, they'll get money, but they won't have been at work.
They've never not, pardon the double negative, but they never not received back pay, correct?
It's federal law now. They have to be paid.
They have to be paid. Okay, so there you go. It's free vacation is what it is, although a low cash flow issue. October 7th, you got Christmas coming up. Does the timing have anything to do with, will that affect the holidays at all, or what people decide how much they're going to spend?
Our Bankrate survey has indicated people are going to begin their holiday shopping earlier rather than later, but I guarantee you this is going to weigh on consumer confidence when we get the next round of reports on that.
Well, I'm still going to get you a Hellflation T-shirt, Mark. Don't worry about it, okay?
God bless you, my friend.
You bet. Thank you. I appreciate your time. We'll take a break, come back, talk to David Schultz about the Supreme Court and what they're going to be looking at on this first Tuesday of October. Yesterday, they got back in session. It was the first Monday in October. 6:30 time now, WWL First News. All right, 6:44, 16 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by David Schultz, professor of public political science and law at Hamline University. How you doing, David?
I am doing well, and I hope you are too.
I am, sir. First Tuesday in October, which means the Supreme Court has been at it for a day. Not that they've ever really gotten away from it. Tell me, first off, before we get into the Supreme Court, the president's talking about invoking the Insurrection Act when it comes to Portland and saying that Portland's on fire. I've never been in Portland. I have no earthly idea if it's on fire or not. The mayor and the governor says this is one block that we're talking about here, not the entire area. Tell me what the Insurrection Act is and what it means that the president could do here.
Well, first off, we have to talk about another act, and this is the Posse Comitatus Act from the, I think, 1878, which bars the use of policing, bars the use of military for domestic policing in the United States. And that's posing to be a limitation upon his ability to be able to deploy the troops the way he wants to do so. However, there's an earlier act, and I'm forgetting the exact date, early 19th century, in which it's called the Insurrection Act, which gives the president of the United States the authority to declare an insurrection and to bring out the military for the purposes of peacekeeping, more or less what you call policing. And so what he's thinking of trying to do is to do a, I'm not sure what word I want to call it here, invoke a different power to say that now you're going to use the Insurrection Act as the basis of my authority. And so what he would do first is declare an emergency and say, to use your words or his words, there's a fire going on in Portland. I need to bring in the National Guard. Therefore, I'm going to invoke the...
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contract. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Insurrection Act give me the authority to do that.
So what is the history of the Insurrection Act?
Well, the Insurrection Act is really clearly for much more of, I want to say it gets us to... more or less occupations, you know, occupation by the United States of foreign troops and by, you know, real serious conflict. I mean, it's rarely, and I can't think of the last time it was actually invoked in the United States. Mm-hmm. Now, someone will probably call in and remind me of when it was or something, but it's used incredibly rarely. And it's, I'm going to say, it's really war and peace type of issues.
So, meaning... in times of war, if I would say 9/11, that kind of thing, or almost.
Yeah, it would be something at that level in terms of what would be invoked. I think there might have. I can't remember now if during the Rodney King riots back in the 90s, and again, I may be off on this one because it might be something like that where we just had significant. You know, looting, burning, and so forth like that. But for the most part, again, if I can put it in terms of war and peace types of issues, at least that was the intent of Congress when they adopted it. When it's we really have, you know, widespread disorder, and it's not clear at all that normal domestic policing can address those issues.
So
it's also an act. I was going to say it's also an act that was adopted at the time before we really had the establishment of modern policing, because modern policing in this country really doesn't date till post Civil War. So it's an act that really comes out of a different context and a different set of purposes.
So according to Newsweek, Dwight Eisenhower used it in 57 to desegregate schools in Arkansas.
Okay.
Lyndon Johnson used it after the assassination of Martin Luther King, and George W. Bush used it during the 1992 Los Angeles riots following the Rodney King verdict. So here's my issue. I don't care if it's Donald Trump or whomever the president happens to be, Barack Obama, pick somebody. The definition between political protest and insurrection, because if the president, whomever the president happens to be, can use the Insurrection Act to quell protest because they deem it insurrection, well, that's a fine line we're walking there, right, in this country? Correct me if I'm wrong.
We are absolutely correct in terms of that, because even though we might think that walking across the Edmund Pettus Bridge, i.e. Martin Luther King back in the 60s, is a peaceful protest. Talk to a bunch of people who are saying that we have lawlessness, we have disorder, we have people who are going to be breaking the law. We need to crush this or clamp down on it. It leaves too much discretion, and if we to the president of the United States, whoever it may be, and if we think of our law is all about is trying to limit discretion, arbitrary discretion, and prevent the abuse of that discretion. And the whole purpose of the First Amendment, in part, is to say that we're not going to let government officials get to use their discretion regarding what type of action or speech they like or dislike.
So when it comes to insurrection. Somebody texted in. I'm just repeating the text, and I think they make a good point because I know what I saw on January 6th. That to me was an insurrection. That to me is a situation where maybe whomever the president was at the time could have called out federal troops and said, "No, we got to protect the federal government." Wrong?
It sort of looks like if you're assaulting the U.S. Capitol or storming the U.S. Capitol, that gets pretty high up on my list of things that would look like an insurrection when we have people storming into the Capitol. And if the accounts are correct here, you know, we had members of Congress who felt personally threatened. If I remember correctly, didn't we have at least one guard at the U.S. Capitol who died as a result? I'm trying to remember now. But the point being is that we had people who assaulted government property, the very heart of our government, under siege. That looks like an insurrection to me.
Well, now we're going to go down a rabbit hole because people say that FBI agents were there that started the protest, which makes no sense because then I don't understand exactly where that conspiracy theory goes, but people can believe whatever they want. Let me take a break. We come back. I want to talk about what the Supreme Court's going to look at this session as it relates to presidential powers. And I would just ask the audience at 504-260-1870, you got to be careful what you ask for here, because what could be viewed as violence, a violent protest against this today, maybe you don't like what the president does tomorrow, then all of a sudden. And real quick, David, somebody's talking about are we talking about National Guard troops or like U.S. Marines or Army, et cetera?
The insurrection gives the president broad leeway, not just in terms of National Guard, but potentially U.S. troops.
Thank you. We'll take a break, pick it up. We come back. Traffic now, WWL. 7.5, Tommy Tucker, WWL. I'm getting a lot of texts here, but I sense they're from the same people that were texting me back in the day that would say, after 9-11, that said, those who would surrender liberty for security deserve neither. But now all of a sudden it seems as though they're willing to surrender liberty for security in Portland, Oregon, or wherever it happens to be. Tell me what the Supreme Court is likely to look at this session. David Schultz, professor of political science and law at Hamline University.
Well, somebody asked me a question yesterday, one of my students, what do I think is the most important case on the Supreme Court docket right now? And I said it's going to be clearly all about Trump's powers, because so far the Supreme Court has avoided directly confronting a lot of the things that Trump is doing, such as what maybe invoking the Insurrection Act or a variety of other things. But I think the single most important case, or a couple of cases here, is going to address the ability of Donald Trump to be able to impose tariffs by himself. There's a law that basically Congress had adopted many, many years ago that outlines under what situations tariffs can be imposed, and the lower courts have been consistently ruling against them. So I put that at the top of the list. And I say that because that's a case that I think literally hits the pocketbook for just about everybody, you know, in the country in terms of that. So that goes at the top of my list. There's some more cases about about transgender rights that are going to be appearing out there in terms of important cases, which I think, again, for a lot of population, that's going to be important. But I would sort of focus on maybe those are the two areas, and certainly there's a lot of other important cases out there, but the case, I think, is the one that's probably going to be the closest, near and dearest to many people's hearts.
All the president's doing, in fairness, is doing what, you know, I don't mean disrespectful here at all, but like a dog would do with a leash or whatever, he's just going as far as he'll go, right? I mean, as far as the courts will let him go?
As far as Congress and the courts will go.
Congress and the courts will let him go.
One of the things we keep forgetting here is that the whole concept of checks and balances and separation of powers requires Congress to also do its job, too. And whether you like the president or dislike the president, what he's doing here, at some point, Congress is expected to do its job. And because Congress has pretty much following the, you know, the line of what Trump wants.
Thank you, David.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.